the backdoor China-USMCA, and the fracture in North American trade. Commentary. Over the past several days, bilateral trade talks between the United States and Canada have broken down. U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer stated that Canada walked away from a nearly completed deal that would have further reduced tariffs on Canadian steel, aluminum, automobiles, and lumber. Ottawa has described the opposite. American demands became excessive, particularly language that would constrain Canada's ability to pursue separate trade relationships with other countries. The public narratives that followed were predictable. Washington emphasized reciprocity and Canada's decision to leave value on the table. Canadian officials spoke of sovereignty, diversification, and resistance to limits on independent economic choices. Both framings capture real diplomatic friction. Neither explains why the talks hardened when they did, or why rules of origin, Chinese content, and preferential access under the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement itself became the decisive pressure points. What is actually driving the hardest U.S. positions is the scale of Chinese-linked transshipment and origin shifting running through Canada and Mexico. The Great Transshipment Scam. Under the USMCA, goods qualify for preferential treatment only if they meet the rules of origin. For automobiles, that currently means 75% North American regional value content, plus requirements for steel, aluminum, and labor value content. These thresholds were deliberately tightened when NAFTA was replaced, precisely to raise the barrier against low-value assembly of non-North American, especially Chinese, components, and to keep more high-value manufacturing and wages inside the three countries. When Chinese origin inputs or near-finished goods are moved into Canada or Mexico, given only light assembly, finishing, packaging, or documentation changes, and then certified as USMC originating, the China-specific tariffs that would otherwise apply can fall to zero. The August 2026 White House Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy report, The Great Transshipment Scam, is explicit routing China-linked goods through Mexico or Canada and improperly securing USMCA treatment is one of the highest value forms of tariff arbitrage in the system. The same report places both countries in tier one of the shadow transshipment network, diversified scale leaders whose large legitimate trade flows make detection harder. Independent estimates of annual high-risk or illegal transshipment range from roughly $40 billion to more than $300 billion. Central figures cluster around $60 billion to $75 billion. Even the more conservative numbers imply tens of billions in avoided tariff revenue before accounting for the displacement of U.S. production and industrial capacity. Not every rise in Canadian or Mexican exports that coincides with a fall in direct shipments from China is illegal. Some reflect genuine investment. The U.S. concern is the systematic subset that uses preferential North American rules to launder Chinese content and capture the tariff differential. How it all started. This problem did not begin with the 2026 joint review. Its roots lie in the 2018 Section 301 tariffs, which covered roughly 70% of Chinese goods exports to the United States. The direct bilateral deficit narrowed, and imports of certain high-tariff products remained far lower in the U.S. market than elsewhere. China adapted. Goods that once moved directly from Chinese ports began moving through third countries with lower tariffs for limited processing and new origin claims. As China's direct share of U.S. imports declined, the combined share from more than 40 elevated risk jurisdictions rose in a near-mirror pattern. The White House report calls this the Great Reallocation. Over time, it hardened into a distributed network of production side and logistics side nodes. Canada and Mexico, by geography and preferential access, became particularly valuable among them. The damage reaches beyond lost revenue. Preferential North American access was meant to support higher domestic and regional production, more resilient supply chains, genuine friendshoring, and reduced structural dependency on the Chinese Communist Party's industrial system. When that access is used instead to absorb Chinese content and competitive pressure, the tariff wall is breached from the inside. Chinese industrial capacity re-enters the U.S. market through the back door of Canada and Mexico, exactly the outcome the Section 301 measures and the tightened USMCA rules were designed to limit. Official data show that U.S. content in transportation equipment exports from Mexico and Canada has declined in recent years, while Chinese and broader Asian content has risen. Friendshoring assumes partners do not become convenient platforms for the dependencies the strategy seeks to reduce. When they function as high-value nodes in the shadow transshipment network, that distinction blurs. The same dynamic affects the defense industrial base, which requires transparent and less CCP-dependent supply chains. None of this requires proving that every shipment violates the formal letter of the rules. The cumulative effect is sufficient. A system that permits large volumes of China-linked goods to enter under North American preferences while U.S. content shares fall runs counter to both the spirit of the USMCA and the broader project of reducing reliance on the Chinese industrial system. A game of incentives and grievances. Explaining why Canada and Mexico have tolerated these flows does not require attributing malice to their leaderships. The more accurate frame is structural. The CCP has spent decades constructing an environment in which other countries' short-term interests and domestic political narratives align with Beijing's long-term goals. It offers immediate benefits, market access, investment, tariff relief, and the appearance of diversification, while embedding Chinese content and logistics so deeply that later unwinding becomes costly. It also amplifies existing domestic narratives that create friction with the United States. For Canada, the incentives were concrete. The January 2026 arrangement lowered the 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles to the most favored nation rate for a defined quota, secured relief on canola and other agricultural exports, and opened the door to Chinese investment in the electric vehicle and battery supply chain. Framed as sovereignty and diversification, it delivered near-term gains. Canada's position as the smaller neighbor, protected by U.S. security architecture and its biggest trading partner, yet culturally inclined toward differentiation, provided additional domestic political space for that framing. Mexico saw large volumes of China-linked goods and investment interests deliver jobs and export growth. Under U.S. pressure, it raised tariffs on Chinese vehicles to 50% and saw planned plants delayed, showing incentives can shift. Yet the pattern of rising Chinese content has not disappeared. Elements of Mexican political culture have long cultivated narratives of national potential constrained by the United States. Investigative reporting has documented extensive consular political activity inside the United States aligned with Mexican government priorities. The CCP does not invent these currents. It benefits when they harden into resistance against deeper alignment on supply chain enforcement. Furthermore, democratic governments operate on electoral cycles measured in years. The CCP plans for decades. By making short-term rewards of accommodating its priorities larger and more certain than the diffuse long-term costs of resistance, Beijing turns existing narratives and incentives into instruments that advance its interests. What's next? The joint review and new enforcement tools now present a narrower set of realistic choices. One path is a tightened, enforceable USMCA with higher content thresholds, clearer limits or disclosure on non-market content, stronger verification, and pairing with the Customs Executive Order and AI-enabled targeting already under development. Mexico has moved further in this direction than Canada. A second path is bilateral and transactional. Separate arrangements that exchange market access for verifiable origin cooperation and restrictions on Chinese content in sensitive sectors. A third is continued divergence, shifting the agreement into annual reviews, greater uncertainty, and the reassertion of tariff differentials. That outcome would impose costs on all three economies but would also close the current backdoor channel. None of the paths is costless. What is no longer realistic is the previous equilibrium. Broad preferential access, rising Chinese content, and limited verification. The decisive variable is enforcement credibility. Textual changes matter only if matched by the capacity to distinguish genuine regional production from origin shifting. Canada and Mexico retain agency in making their choices. The CCP will continue offering inducements designed to keep the back door open. The question for the next phase of North American trade is whether the three governments treat Chinese intentional industrial overcapacity as a common external issue, or allow it to remain a wedge that converts preferential access into a conduit for the very dependencies the tariffs and the USMCA were meant to reduce.